Hello and welcome to Box Office Culture. I am your host, Tony Nunes, and today on Box Office Culture, we are talking about something I've talked about many times on this podcast before, but it's here. It is here. It is Dune Part 2, coming up on Box Office Culture. Okay, we are back, and guess who my host is this week? If you've listened to this show before, you're never going to guess. That's right. It's producer Lee.
It's me. It's Lee Metzger. I'm back. I'm doing the show. At this point, I think it's safe to say that you can just expect me to be on the show from here on out.
Yeah, he's not a co-host. He does not want to be called a co-host. He is producer Lee.
Producer Lee.
And he is a fixture here on the Box Office
I'm on
Culture.
The show, but I'm not on the show.
He's our Box Office Uncultured.
That's rude. A rude thing to say.
Point, counterpoint, no?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. There's conflict has to be manufactured on a good show.
Yes.
Sometimes.
It does. Or it's real and pure like this one right
it's
here.
It's pure vitriol.
That's right.
I'm pissed.
It's okay.
What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about why you're pissed.
Well, I saw Dune.
Okay, well, no, don't.
And I have an opinion on it.
We are talking Dune Part 2 today, and that's exciting for me. Is it exciting for you, Lee?
Yes, I love this movie, and I saw the one that came out in 84. It was when I was in college, so, you know, it kind of comes and goes. But I did love that film. Not really, like, I don't think it was... I think mostly I loved it because of how it looked.
You were in college in 1984? How old are you?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Yeah, so we're going to dive into a discussion on Dune Part 2. I think there's going to be some spoilers. That's my prediction. So if you have
spoiler
not seen the film...
Alert.
Spoiler alert. So let's start, you know, here at the United Theater where we're doing this podcast. We're very excited in 2021 when Dune Part 1 came out. I must have seen that film here at the United like six times probably on the big screen. Just the music, the Hans Zimmer score in both films. It gets me going.
Gets you going.
It gets me going. So it's been a couple of years and here we are, Dune Part 2. Finally, Denis Villeneuve has done it again. I will say... I absolutely loved this film. And it's, you know, it's a little over 2.5 hours. I think that's where it goes. A little over
240.
And I know we've complained on this show before about runtimes and how films, you know, 90 minutes is a sweet spot. But I'll tell you what, at 2 hours and 40 minutes, this movie did not feel long at all. The pacing, perfect. I mean, Villeneuve is a master of pacing, of storytelling, of structure, of visuals. There's things in this movie I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It was so exciting. Like every frame of this movie, very exciting. The cast in this movie, which we'll dive into a little deeper, brilliant. Honestly, this is like a 5 out of 5 for me, this movie, and I liked it. And so was Dune Part 1, but I like this one a little more.
From a movie-going standpoint, I think that not only was the film on its own just a like you said, 5 out of 5, incredible film, but also the experience in the cinema. The sounds, the sights, truly incredible. You said you've seen things that you never saw before in this film. And I agree, there was this one shot where the Emperor's ship comes down, not to skip around or anything, but the Emperor's ship comes down to Arrakis. And as it kind of like enters as it nears Arrakeen, the main city on there, the capital city of Arrakis, it's this reflective ship, kind of, you know, a la those ships from the royal ships from Naboo. If you're a fan of
Star
Wars.
Ship from Flight of the Navigator, the classic 80s film.
for all those at home keeping score. And it was this incredible reflective surface, reflecting the surface of Dune. And it was such an incredible transition from the sky and the clouds over Arrakis to the getting closer and closer to the surface of the planet. Just truly an incredible spectacle of a shot. It was just, the scale, the magnitude of this, of the entire film felt incredible. And the other thing I want to say about, you talk about how the pacing worked and how the film moved, even though it was 2 hours and 40 minutes. I saw an interview with Villeneuve the other day talking about how none of the deleted scenes will be released to the public.
I saw that too.
Yeah. And
amazing.
Which is kind of cool. I like that.
It's crazy too, because the irony there is that he also did Blade Runner 2049, which is an incredible, you know, sequel to Blade Runner, which we were all like, you can't do a sequel to Blade Runner. And the irony of Blade Runner is that the best version of Blade Runner is Ridley Scott's director's cut. So the irony here is like Villeneuve is like, no, I don't need a director's cut.
Yeah, he said
he's bragging because studios give him what he wants. Uh-huh. You know,
well, it's cool hearing that, because coming from, I think him talking about his film that way, he was talking about, like, in the editing room, they say you have to kill your darlings. If you're going to make an incredible film, you have to kill your darlings, because there are these scenes that you fall in love with or pieces of dialogue that you think are important to the film. And sometimes they need to go because you're attached to them or they don't fit the narrative or whatever, but they need to go. And I think the process of doing that, it has gravity, and you have to honor that process and honor the thing that you have afterwards. Not, you know, I like the whole Snyder cut deal.
It's like writing a screenplay. If you're writing a screenplay and you write your first draft of your screenplay and then you make it, you're not a good screenwriter.
No,
you are, like, you can't get over yourself. You're probably, you know, a little, you know, a bit of a sociopath, and you're like, you know, I am perfect. I wrote this thing. Check it out. The thing with filmmaking is, if you're writing a screenplay, you're going through multiple drafts. You know, you're writing 3, 4, 5, maybe 10 drafts until you hit what you need to hit. And then when you start filming, the same thing happens. You bring on the actors. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what kind of performance is. And then you go into the editing room. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, we filmed all of this great stuff. It's like Peter Jackson. He's like, we filmed all of this amazing stuff. Now let's do like 3 6-hour cuts of our films. And you watch those, and you might be the biggest Lord of the Rings fan in the world, but like, I watch those and I'm like, oh my God, the bloat here is ridiculous. So at least he knows, you know. And God, this movie was so tight. It just felt so tight.
It did not feel 2 hours and 40 minutes.
It didn't. You know, here's the thing. This is part two. Part three, which this movie leads up to a point that is, you could say it's a cliffhanger. You could also say it could be seen as a resolution if it needed to. But my hope here is that they do the third film, because
there has to be.
There
they
is
must.
A third film in mind. So the screenplay is in process, from what he said in interviews. The first two movies are based on Frank Herbert's Dune,
original book that came out in 1965.
Yep, and the third movie would be based on Dune Messiah, which is the second book. The really ironic thing here that I wanted to talk about real quick is Frank Herbert, when that movie came out, or when the first book came out, rather, he was kind of taken aback with people's thought process behind...
It's a Fight Club effect.
He's like, Paul Atreides is not a hero. Paul Atreides is, you know, he's got a god complex. He is the Messiah, but is, you know, he's a fanatic who buys into his own fanaticism. He is not a hero. Please don't think of him as a hero. So it was interesting. It's interesting to see these movies and think about that, because here you are again, and you have Timothée Chalamet cast. And, you know, Wonka. People love Timothée Chalamet. So I think the same thing a little bit is happening. So anybody who's seen...
But it's got to be by design, though, right?
I don't...
Like, I feel all of this seems so, in a good way,
it's
manufactured.
Design, building towards a third movie if it happens.
But I agree.
It looks likely this third movie will happen because this had the best opening weekend of the year so far, and it's really doing big numbers.
There's no way.
So Warner Brothers, hopefully green lights, and in 2 years we have Dune Part 3, which will be the conclusion. And then we have a perfect trilogy, hopefully. But I think that it's a weird effect, right? So you watch these films, and say they never make Dune Part 3. A lot of people will watch these films, and in the end, yes, you think... And we'll talk about this, you know, fanaticism angle in a minute. But you see Timothée Chalamet at the end. You're like, okay, he's making, like, really rash decisions here. He's, like, listening to his mom a little too much. And you're like, oh, God, what is he doing? And that's kind of how the film ends. But I could see people thinking he's a hero here because he's built up as a hero for what? It's... 4-5 hours of film.
Yes, for sure. But the audience surrogate of Chani is there the whole time, like speaking what we're all seeing.
Oh yeah,
like they have all these conversations and about like the fabrication of a prophecy and how that's BS. And Paul says like, oh, I'm never gonna buy into that. I know that it's just. Of a false lie. He calls out his mom about like she says, oh, we're and I do we want to talk about the Bene Gesserit or should we?
We can talk about the Bene Gesserit. We should talk a little bit about the fanaticism then.
Well, first,
going down this
okay
road.
before we talk about that, I want to say to your point about people misunderstanding or the reason that this third or second book, Dune Messiah, and hopefully the third book or the third movie,
yep.
also will probably be called Dune Messiah, came out is due to people misunderstanding the source material. It's the same kind of thing that happened with Watchmen with Rorschach. It's the same kind of thing that happened with Fight Club with whatever his name is, Brad Pitt. It's the same kind of thing that happened with Starship Troopers, and it's happening again right now with Helldivers 2, which is another movie about fascism and killing bugs. And there is this thing that keeps on happening where people, like the satire is too good. It's too on the nose, and it's too like if something is so obvious, sometimes it becomes difficult to understand or process.
But this isn't satire. I mean, Dune Part 2 is not satirical.
No, for sure. But it is doing this thing where it's presenting what we believe is a protagonist and showing their maybe not decline. Well, yeah, decline into madness.
It's showing an arc. And
yes,
you've only got
arc.
Two parts of the arc
That's right.
so far. But I think they gave you enough at the end of this film into that third piece of the arc where you're like, okay, he's going down a dangerous path. But it leaves viewers who have not read the books thinking like, okay, he's going to redeem himself. I bet you most people who have not read the books and watched these films are expecting the third film to be him redeeming himself and like saving the empire to go back to another famous trilogy.
Or no spoilers for the book.
No
Dune
spoilers
Messiah.
For the book, but you know, your expectations might not be right.
Yeah.
I do, before we talk about the Bene Gesserit and the fanaticism angle, which is really, is played really well here.
I've never seen it depicted like it is in this film.
Yeah. The dangers of it and like, but let's talk about trilogies real quick.
Very good.
So Star Wars trilogy is obviously the best example of a science fiction trilogy. That
science fiction
go
trilogy,
to.
Sure. Not fantasy, though.
No, sci-fi, and Dune is sci-fi. And I think Empire Strikes Back is regarded as one of
yes.
the greatest films ever made and probably like
oh, okay.
the greatest sequel ever made. And it's most certainly the greatest film within a trilogy, I think. It just does everything it needs to do. How do you think Dune Part 2 fits as the middle piece of what might be a three-piece puzzle?
I think it's great. I think it's a perfect second act to a three-act story. You have the pure desperation that Chani ends the movie with of like the man that she loved and the person she thought she knew completely turned from her.
And Zendaya is great in
this movie.
She's great in everything she does.
Yes.
And it's funny, in the first movie in 2021, she was built, she had like top line billing, but she shows up like five or six times in like weird dream scenario flashback segments. Well, here she has a lot to chew
she's
on.
She's got a lot to do.
And she, she is amazing. I mean, the entire cast is amazing, but she is the one person, the one through line to beginning of the movie to the end of the movie that is that denier and that that cautionary voice saying, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going too deep into this idea of this messiah complex and this thing. Whereas you have Javier Bardem, Stilgar is his character's name. He's the opposite. He is like fully invested in Paul Atreides, and he is fully invested that he is Lisan al-Ghaib. So much so that he becomes the comic kind of the only comic portion of this film.
This movie has so many things that I want to talk about, like the comedy in this film. I was so surprised that there are just like straight up comic beats.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning when Paul Atreides and his mom are hanging out, Lady Jessica are hanging out with the Fremen and they're not accepted yet. And it's like he's a teen.
It's like a teen movie.
And there's this incredible moment where like they're like all hanging out. The Fremen are like all clumped up in their cliques. And there's a group of like younger teens hanging out, and they like are laughing, and Paul Atreides is in, kind of like walks over, and he's like, "What are you guys laughing at?"
And it's really funny. It's like a high school like comedy.
Can't you see Michael Cera?
Yeah,
as Paul Atreides giving that line.
Hey guys, what are you laughing? What's so funny?
It's what are you laughing at?
Yeah, a really awkward teen moment, which is grounding and nice because you know this poor kid is like. His dad just died. Mm-hmm. He's like being told that he's like the
not just his dad, his entire line, his entire lineage, like house.
It's just him and his mom. Family. But what you said about satire, speaking of comedy,
real quick, just to put a bow on it. I do think that this is an incredible, like this is up there with Empire. This is up there with Two Towers for a incredibly. And I think this is going to be like a linchpin moment for this series.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, for sure,
no one's gonna argue that
a David Lynch pin.
Let's
moment.
Go.
Okay, sorry.
If you liked that joke, get down in the comments. Tell us how many times Tony needs to run around the theater because it was a terrible joke.
I'm sorry. No, but you mentioned satire earlier.
I did.
And the thing about the Stilgar character is that everything that Paul Atreides does in this movie, he yells, "Lisan al-Ghaib."
You know, he's like
everything he does. He's like, see, I told you, chosen one. But it becomes funny and it becomes a through line of comedy throughout the film because like literally everything he does, it's being highly memed right now and it's really funny. But that comedy piece is the satire.
Yep.
That comedy piece of him saying like, oh yeah, look there, see there, I told you, is the fanaticism at play. And it's the satire of that fanaticism to that point where people get where they're like, no, this is right. You're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. And they get so committed that they stop seeing the truth and the reality around them. And they're just dedicated to the bit. And the bit here is so dangerous. And the bit in like, you know, a lot of organized religion that revolves around fanaticism and the Messiah complex and things like that. And that's where Dune really slays it because You see every level of this. Only in two films, you see the Bene Gesserit going to these planets like decades before this stuff starts playing out.
Millennia.
Yeah, planting seeds, like literally and metaphorically. They're literally planting seeds because they're impregnating people across the galaxy to try to create bloodlines and kind of write their own scenarios. But they're also sowing the seeds of mysticism and whispering in ears and talking of this second coming and training people on it and, you know, playing into their weaknesses. And I think that really is captured incredibly in this film. it really is a cautionary tale about the dangers of fanaticism. And as a storyline, as a theme, a thematic element, I thought it was really strong. And to plant it in a science fiction movie like this, it just makes a lot of sense. It feels so you feel so grounded on this planet of Arrakis.
Yep.
But everything else around you is so crazy, and you're seeing things you've never seen before. Like, there's things in this movie I've never seen before, mm-hmm. which is admirable. But at its core, you're seeing something that you've seen so many times, and you want to scream like, nah, no, stop.
What are you excited about exploring in the next film? Is there something that you saw, like you said, you know, something seeded in this film that you're really excited to get into?
Here's where I get really nerdy.
Let's go.
So there is an element in all of these Dune books. There's a group called the Spacing Guild. Mm. And the Spacing Guild are these, they're almost like alienoid.
So a quick backstory on the Spacing Guild and the reason that you don't see any computers or technology in Dune.
Yeah. So the Spacing Guild, well, the computers and technology in Dune, this future, this world... nobody trusts computers. There's no computer science or anything like that because they don't trust them because they think, you know, AI is going to take down or maybe has taken down societies in Dune's past.
A little poignant.
But the spice that they're getting on Arrakis is used for a lot of different things. And one of the major uses of the spice is for space travel. And there's a group called the Spacing Guild. David Lynch shows the Spacing Guild in his version of Dune, which is not a good movie. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to find any fight here.
The Spacing Guild is this, like, it's really cool. I'm not going to go too deep on it, but these people, like, they infuse so much spice into their lives. They, like, live in a cloud of spice. They become, like, deformed, almost aquatic-like, big alienoid characters, but they're the ones who control space travel.
Yep.
And space travel is instantaneous. Like, they're able to fold space with the spice somehow. And so space travel is so important to trade and to politics and to the empire of this whole world. So I'm really excited to see how they talk about them, because honestly, the emperor and all of these people may be in charge, but the Spacing Guild, those people or whatever they are, those guys are holding the cards.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to their story and power and the monopoly they have over spice trade, over politics, and over the entire universe.
Yeah, there is this ongoing conversation within the films about power. And, you know, there's the second movie opens with the line, power over spice is power over all. And then Paul says later on in the film, he who can destroy something has power over it.
And I'm not sure who those voice. So the first film opened with the voice. Shardukar is the voice.
Well, it was in that language at least.
Yeah. So you ask what I'm looking forward to in the third film. I mean, I'm looking forward to. So the first two films are so grounded on Arrakis, which is awesome. That is Dune. Arrakis is the planet Dune. But I do want to, it's a whole universe, and like, you can instantaneously travel. It's like Star Wars, you know, you get the little hints and you want to explore that universe more. At least with the Star Wars films, you know, you're going to a lot of planets in that original trilogy. Here we're on a few different planets, and that's great. But I really want that third film to open this universe up more. I want to see more of the other planets. I want to see more of the Empire and the Emperor and the Spacing Guild, and because Paul Atreides is working to not only become the Messiah of Arrakis, he's working to become the Messiah of the universe, the entire known universe of the Dune world.
I mean, yes, I love that. I love that answer. And I think that is going to be incredible to see this, the Bene Gesserit have seeded these prophecies made for them to fulfill on Arrakis and everywhere. So I do wonder what that's going to look like once it leaves just Dune.
You Dune wonder.
I Dune wonder. For me, it is kind of a similar answer, but just a filling out of the mythology. Dune is an incredible universe, an incredible sci-fi universe, but it's also an incredible fantasy universe. There are these groups, these organizations, the Spacing Guild, the Bene Gesserit, that have gone thousands of years of training their bodies to accomplish things. Like there are these, like every major house has a Mentat, and they are basically human computers because they ran away. They moved away from all these computers. So they have all these beings that are trained in incredibly high functioning mathematical. They can do all this crazy calculus. What that has left is like these. So some people can do crazy maths. Some people have straight up magical superpowers. And some people turn into like spice whales that can find a way between worlds by folding space. So I am so excited to like dive further into these fantastical elements of this universe because it is truly nuts, some of this stuff.
It's crazy. I mean, I really...
Some of this stuff is nuts.
It's wild. Yeah, totally wild. But the one fear I have, I will say, about a third movie is, you know, there's so many Dune books. I would want them to take the third movie, and I think Villeneuve could do this. I believe in him, but close it out the third film and let it be. But that's not going to happen because there's a, I think it's called Dune Prophet. There's a show in the works, right now. It's a vast world and I do love exploring it deeper. But I don't want to overstay our welcome. Like Star Wars and Marvel and things like that, they're oversaturating by going to TV and we're going to do more movies and different directors. I don't want that in the Dune universe. I want a solid trilogy, maybe a TV show spinoff with like some prequel or future implications, but that's it. Like, don't open this up to like a multiverse scenario.
I agree. And I think that hopefully they learned their lesson from Marvel, from Star Wars, that if you're going to continue a overall, maybe not a one narrative story, but like a world, a universe of stories, oversaturation, that's what you're going to be bumping up against always. So if you do, I love the idea of this being like the core Dune trilogy. Mm-hmm. And then we've got like, a limited series on Max,
yeah,
1 year. And then the next year, another limited series of Children of Dune, yeah, limited series. Yeah. And then like, and I especially
if it's
like
carefully done,
I think I really wish more IPs would move to television, move to like high end television,
but one at a time.
We don't need all of the MCU.
It's too much
shows.
Too much.
Yes. So give me like 1 8 episode series where we really go into something. I just saw like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I just finished watching. You just watched that?
Yeah,
as well.
We'll talk about. We'll do an episode.
We'll do that. Yes. Yeah, so next. Keep your eyes.
Next week's
when
Oscars.
We give it to you.
Next week is the Oscars League.
Next week is the Oscars. We're going to be teasing that.
We're doing post Oscars.
Yes, and we're going to do an Oscars show.
We are.
We're wearing tuxes.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
I don't have a tux.
We'll get you one. I know a guy. His name is Lou Toscano.
Beautiful man.
But anyway, I wish that more things did that, where it's like we are going to tell a very, very incredible story over 8 episodes on primetime television, and not primetime as in on TV.
Yeah, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the oversaturation thing just freaks me out right now. I think the next step, hopefully this movie continues to do really well, sells a lot of tickets, makes a lot of money, and Warner Brothers is like, you got it, man. You got the green light. Go forth and make Dune Part 3, Dune Messiah, whatever you want to call it. That's my hope, because what a great time. Like, what a great time. And
true.
We saw it on the biggest screen we have here at the United, which has great sound. It's just, you have to see this movie on the big screen.
It's true.
And that's, you know, Christopher Nolan and Denis Villeneuve are great pioneers for the film exhibition industry. So I'm excited for that. All right. Well, let's end this conversation there. Do you have anything else to add about Dune Part 2, Lee?
Nope.
All right. Well, all I can say is go watch this movie. And if you have not seen Dune Part 1, go watch that first, because Dune Part 2 probably doesn't make a whole lick of sense without Dune Part 1. Right?
Yeah. Don't what?
Don't. I mean, people are weird, you know?
That's
people could
true.
Be like, hey, Dune Part 2. I haven't seen Part 1, but this sounds fun.
Yeah. I like sand. I'm the opposite of Anakin Skywalker.
That's right. Don't do that. But come see it. And like we just teased out, we'll be back next week post-Oscars to talk about this year's Oscars and how it all went down. Best Picture winner prediction. What do you think?
Prediction to win or who do I
want
to win?
Who do you want to win?
I actually made a prediction, and I don't remember what I said. I think Killers is probably going to win. Killers of the Flower Moon.
I think Oppenheimer is going to win.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be one of those two, sure.
I want Barbie or Poor Things.
Barbie.
Poor Things was my favorite movie of the year, but either of those two would be a really fun win.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. But we're going to talk about it next week, so stay tuned. Until then, thank you for listening to Box Office Culture. As always, make sure you subscribe. Follow us, do all of the things. And if you like my humor, my dad jokes, like Lee said, please do send us a comment. I need all the support I can get. Thank you. Until next week.
Thanks for having me. Oh, wait, I'm on the show now.
's for tuning in to the United Theater Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to subscribe to our show so you never miss an episode. And if you could take a moment to leave a review, we'd greatly appreciate it. Your feedback helps us create content that you love. So hit that subscribe button and leave us a review, and we'll see you on the next episode.